Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 99 of the Crick Picks podcast on Combox, where the game lives on. I'm going to be doing that fairly regularly now, so better get used to it. And for those of you who don't know what Crick Picks is all about, what we do in this podcast is that we take any generic cricket category and we draft our top five each for that category in a snake-style draft competition. The pick order goes 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. That's what that means. I'm, of course, Behram Kazi, who you can find at DeathMango on Twitter. We've got Estelle back for this bumper episode, who's been AWOL for a bit, but she's pretty excited for this, as is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. The topic has been suggested by our supporters on Patreon. They wanted us to pick our favorite cricketers of all time so that they can learn a thing or two about us. That's exactly what the message says. So how do you guys feel about that?
I feel like this might be the only one where there are no wrong answers. Yeah. And yet I still think someone's going to do a wrong answer.
I feel like there's going to be some sort of chaos.
It's going to be one of my favorite episodes because you guys can't laugh at anything I say because it's a favorite.
Challenge me.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can laugh at things you say. I think it's one of those things where there's no wrong answers, but like, you know, if someone picks, I don't know, a cricketer who's been cancelled or something, or like, I still think there's potential pitfalls there as well. And it also says a lot about you as a person, this episode, right? Like, who you are, what matters to you. And we can laugh at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think laughter will be guaranteed. But for me, I feel like this will tell you a lot about my childhood. Because your favorite cricketers are often those cricketers that you grew up with. And you were a proper fan when you were like a teenager, for instance, right? Like my view of the game or viewpoint, the lens with which I watch cricket now is very different to what it was when I was 13 years of age. So I feel like for me, this is more nostalgia as opposed to where we're at currently in our lives. Anyway, I am first. And I'm sorry if I will eventually steal this pick from you, Estelle, but you know this was always going to be my answer.
Oh no.
My favorite cricketer of all time is Kumar Sangakkara. I've been pretty vocal about this throughout my career, speaking in front of a camera. And I had the pleasure of meeting Sangha at Lords. I said that I won't fanboy and I ultimately ended up fanboying. And those were my words to him. I was like, I told myself I won't fanboy, but here I am. And okay. Yeah.
Can I tell you, I don't think I've even told Behram this, but this is the episode to do it. So Behram obviously went up to Kumar Sangakkara and talked to him, and there was a few people laughing because he was fanboying. And I think even from a distance, they understood that that was what was happening. But then Kumar Sangakkara went back to the commentary box and he said, I've just met the weirdest dude in the lunch line who was like really excited to see me. Because you got to remember, that doesn't happen as much in press boxes as it does everywhere else. And so I think Kumar was even put off. So there's even a chance that Kumar Sangakkara remembers how much of a fan you are of him, right? That's how much of an impression you made, that he was saying to everyone, it's this guy with the beard, look, and he's like pointing at you like outside of a window or something to everyone else. So you actually made an impact on Kumar Sangakkara. Whether it was a good one or not, that's up, you know, that's for other people to work out. But I know that happened for a fact.
Hey, I'll take it if Sangha remembers me, whether that's in a positive or negative light. And look, originally I was a bit lost for words and I had met Lara early in the day by the elevator. So it's not like I was fanboying over everyone. You have to understand this. I'd already been working in cricket and I had been interacting with cricketers. So it was different with Sangha because I thought to myself that at some point in this test match, when you know he's not around a lot of people, that's when I will go. Because otherwise it looks weird when he's talking to someone and you're standing right next to them and now it's a thing. But I essentially just told him that, you know, he's my favorite batter of all time. And, you know, I thanked him for all that he's done for Pakistan cricket. You know, not just the fact that, you know, he's always been vocal about bringing cricket back to Pakistan and was a part of the PSL, but he also took the MCC team back to Pakistan to kind of start that process. And that's something that really, you know, touched a lot of hearts over here because Sangha was a part of the 2009 Sri Lankan team, which went through all that.
But he was there when it was attacked, right?
Exactly.
So it was a big deal for him to be like that. I mean, look, he's kind of like the alpha nerd cricketer, isn't he? And I could see why that appeals to a young Behram. Like, I get that.
I mean, also, he's, apart from the fact that he was an extremely elegant batter, very classy, love his cover drives, and he would score, you know, daddy hundreds and big scores. And, you know, he was amongst the pantheon of batters in his generation. I'll die on that hill. Average of 57 test cricket, gimme. But He's also this extremely eloquent person who you love to listen to. Like, if Sangha is giving a speech, I am there. I am seated. So there's also that element to this. And a charismatic person who I love to watch bat. I have a bit of a left-handed bias anyway. And then, of course, you know, the fact that he went through the Sri Lankan attack in 2009 in Lahore, and then he was the guy who pushed hard to bring cricket back to Pakistan. That just, it hits a different kind of chord. It's hard to explain. And he was already my favorite cricketer before that. So you can kind of piece things together of how much that meant to me personally. And I made sure I told him that even if he thought I was a weirdo.
No, he definitely thought you were a weirdo. It kind of reminds me a little bit, like, so one of my, well, my favorite athlete of all time is probably Dikembe Mutombo, the NBA player. And I just picked him because he blocked shots a lot, right? Like, and he was fun and he was very emotional when he played. Like, you know, there was a lot going on. He was wagging his fingers and everything. And then Dikembe Mutombo goes on to be a guy who builds like hospitals in Africa, right? And sets up African basketball and, you know, becomes this statesman-like figure. And you just like, sometimes you can just get lucky and you pick the right athlete when you're young and then you end up with this, you know, proper hero. And I think in Kumar Sangakkara's case, that's what's happened to you. And in his case, he feels like he has an awkward stalker.
Yeah, I suppose so. Mm-hmm. But there will be a day where I'm positive I'm going to have this or recount this story with Sangha himself and we'll probably break the ice.
Oh, can I tell you, this is a story. I've actually written about this before, but I think I've written about this before. Wright Thompson, me and Wright Thompson were in an event during the World Cup in 2012, right? That was the Sri Lanka World Cup, T20 World Cup. And me and Wright Thompson were there. And we were at some event that we'd been both invited to. And it was like these are the sort of events I didn't get invited to very much back in those days. But it was, everyone was there, right? Like, it was a ridiculous thing. And so Mahela and Kumar were there.
Okay.
Right? And Wright Thompson sort of leaned over to me at one stage and he said, watch this. Mahela will come over and be really, really nice and will chat to me. And Kumar will wave from the other side of the room. And I'm looking at Wright like, what? Like, because I know he'd spent a lot of time with them because he did the big article on both of them, right? And then, and that's exactly what happened. Mahela, and like, I've worked with Mahela a couple of times, just a really lovely guy, but kind of like, you wouldn't know Mahela was a cricketer unless you saw other people fawning around Mahela, right? Mm. Like, I always thought Mahela's ex-wife was more of a star than Mahela was, right? Whereas Kumar is very sort of cool, you know, he thinks about things a lot more standoffish. So it's really, you know, interesting guys, very close to each other, but very different sort of people in a lot of ways.
Yeah, interesting fashion sense as well for Sangha with those glasses that he wears. Anyway, Estelle, you're up next. I'm sorry if I stole your pick. Potentially, you would have had Sangha in there.
I was going to say, I mean, obviously, he's a great player, but not on my favorites list. I'm
Fair
older
enough.
Than you, Nobiram, so...
Mm. Also, Jared, before she picks a single player, what is the Australia-Sri Lanka split going to be for Estelle over here? Like, three Australians, two Sri Lankans? Four Australians,
I'd be shocked if there's more Sri Lankans than Australians.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked. I'd be genuinely shocked at that.
All right. Let's hear it.
Okay, so I when I was going through the list, first of all, picking five was like a headache, right? So my first three are, I would say, three who I really loved at different stages of my life. So I wasn't sure whether I should pick like the first one as the one who I loved during childhood. But overall, I would say Adam Gilchrist, my number one.
Screw you! I should have gone Gilly.
Adam Gilchrist, my number one, because... You know, I think at that, this was maybe when I was in my teens, like just like the moral code and stuff like that really resonated with me in how he played the game. And of course, Australia was my second favorite team.
Second favorite.
In the world. So it was kind of an easy cricketer to like, right? The way he played the game, but also that he was so good at what he did, whether it was, you know, ODI cricket or Test cricket, the impact he had on the game kind of changed that role of wicketkeeper batter as well. So I really loved watching him play. And he's also shown himself to be like a man of character, right? A person who you can look up to. So that was an easy pick for me at number one.
I don't know if it will be a popular one
for other Sri Lankans, but
I was about to say, that was my next question was, I remember being given a book by this Sri Lankan writer, and I've talked about this book before. I forget the name of it, actually, but I've got it somewhere. It was A History of Sri Lankan Cricket. There's like an entire chapter.
Wind in the Willows.
Is it that one?
It might be that, right?
I don't know. I'd have to go and look. I know it's on my shelf somewhere. But there's an entire chapter in this book that basically says that Gilchrist cheated to win the World Cup in 2007, despite the fact that Australia was the greatest ODI side that had probably ever existed in that tournament. World Cup side, anyway, how they played. And the squash balls. So I love that you've picked the guy that Sri Lankans specifically don't like when it comes to that. That is,
and I also mentioned character, so...
I mean, yeah.
He does have a weird history with Sri Lanka because it was the 2003 game where he walked, right? I think if you go and look at all of Gilchrist's career, I'm not sure he always walked. And I think he thought he was given out, right?
No.
And that's why he starts to go. And I can't remember if there might even be a micro pause in there where he's like, I'm not sure what's happened. And then he's given the game away by starting to walk. So I think that's fascinating. He's in my book, of course. We basically use him in the book as an example of why we believe we're as trying to be as objective as possible. But I don't know if he makes it in my, I don't think you took him as a pick away from me, but I think Gilchrist was much watched TV for a long period of time, right? Like, as in, if you were watching an Australian ODI, if he went out, there was like a lull. And like Ponting was coming in next, but it wasn't the same because Gilchrist was so dynamic and so unlike anyone else that had come before him. But as I said, I basically based my life on the way that Gilchrist batted, which was just take chances and forget it and accept that like sometimes they're not going to come off and that you're going to fail. And so, you know, in the book, we talk about what would Gilly do. And it did change the way the reason I'm here now is in part because of how Adam Gilchrist has batted. And I've met him a couple of times, but I've never really had a chance to chat to him about that and discuss it. But now, I mean, you know, that he's Bayram's guy. So, Estelle's guy. So I can't even claim him anymore.
I mean,
I don't have the guts of Bayram. I saw him. So when I was at the 2022 World Cup, he was on the same flight as me. And I saw him lining up for the business class tickets. I saw him collecting his luggage and I did not walk up and say anything.
Oh, man. Well, you have definitely
But Bayram's absolutely shameless. Do you want to be the person that Gilchrist goes, did you see that weirdo who came up to me at the baggage claim?
Yeah, I mean, that could have been a story. But look, Gilchrist was my second pick, surely. I should have thought this through. You are likelier to pick Adam Gilchrist as opposed to Kumar Sangakkara. And that's completely on me.
I don't think Sangakkara is even in my top 20. Like, if I had to pick 20.
Wow.
I mean, it's not anything to do with
Estelle
how
hates
was,
Kumar Sangakkara.
Blasphemous stuff. No, but for me, the rationale for Gilly was very simple. I'm in 11 or 12-year-old or 13-year-old, there and thereabouts, and I always switch the TV on when this guy is batting. I cannot miss it. He is just that dude, right? And he's a lefty as well, hard-hitting opening batter. Someone who I always thought to be very like fun to watch even when he was wicket-keeping. He's the chirpy sort of bloke who, I don't know, like his wicket-keeping was quite athletic as well. He could go for those diving catches, and he was just like overall a great package to kind of witness in like a cricket field. That came out pretty weird. I love his commentary as well. Like, I like to listen to Adam Gilchrist as well. So I'm not happy with this, Estelle. We will sort this out later, but you've stolen my pick.
And you didn't talk about his bowling. That one wicket.
Of course.
I can promise you both that my next pick is definitely not stealing from either of you and that you do not have this pick on. But I'm going to go Bryce McGain.
I knew this as my
next pick. So you talked about the childhood thing. It's quite interesting. I think I'm just looking at the rest of my list. I think everyone else on my list is from childhood, right? Oh, there's actually one player who just misses out who's not from childhood, but everyone else is from childhood. But the Bryce McGain one's really interesting. Of course, you know, Bryce McGain is a guy who's playing club cricket in his 20s, late 20s too. And like, when I say club cricket, he wasn't playing firsts. He was playing seconds, right? And then he starts to put everything together, gets picked for Victoria a little bit too soon, doesn't really do much. And then I think he was 29 when he made his debut for Victoria. And then he gets picked again for Victoria when he's like 34 or 35. And then goes on this long, torturous arc of Australia want to pick him, but every time they pick him, he's injured. And so he's not ready, and he's supposed to play against India, and that doesn't work, and he should have played home tests, and that didn't work. And then he finally gets picked and goes to South Africa when he's clearly not ready. And of all people, Ashwell Prince and Jacques Callis absolutely destroy him, and he never plays again. But for me, it's the guy who just keeps believing in the dream beyond anyone else. Like, I don't know if there's many cricketers we've ever... I can't think of many other cricketers in the history of the game who were playing, who never played professionally at the age of 28 and had played a lot of second 11 cricket, who still thought they could genuinely play for Australia and was framing his whole life around it. He told me he wouldn't drink during test matches because he'd want to watch the test matches. So, you know, he talked about, you know, Warne and Murali and Mushtaq and Saqlain Mushtaq and all these different guys who he would watch to try and get tips from, right? That's a dedication to something that everyone else has given up. And I think that there's obviously a parallel with my career in that, you know, I only really start writing in when I'm 27. So it's very similar from that perspective as well. But yeah, he has maybe the worst debut in the history of cricket, and that's his only test and never plays again. But there's something wild about that. And, you know, I was kind of a part of the whole journey. And you know, Bryce knows about all this. And I was probably the first person to do a long sit-down interview with him. And he encouraged my career a lot as well. Like, you know, so we've had this relationship. His son, I think his son, I'm just outing his son here for no reason, but I think his son does my course as well. Mm. You know, so it's, you know, that I just feel like... That for me was probably my favorite cricketer of all time. Also, so we don't ruin the entire episode of Crick Picks, I'm saying that Bryce McGain represents a lot of different Victorian cricketers. So I don't pick like five Victorian cricketers you've all never heard of. So Bryce McGain also counts for Ian Harvey and Matthew Elliott. So you don't have to worry about that. Or Graham Vimpany. So at least you guys have heard of Elliott and, you know, but yeah, so I think he sort of counts for all of those guys. Craig Howard as well. Or just random. I'm just pulling out names. It sounds like I'm making up people's names at this point. But I think, yeah, that was obviously a very big part of my life, was sitting down watching these guys when there was sometimes 50, 60 people in the MCG, right? And Bryce McGain, you know, when I first saw him, I actually wrote this story. And I don't think it was his girlfriend, but it was like a girl that was clearly... I don't want to get into the full details, but there was a girl at the ground who clearly was interested in him. And I was at that stage also going, this guy should be playing for Australia. Like, he's the best spinner in Australia at the moment, even though he's a 35-year-old random guy. And I happened to be sitting like 2 meters from this random woman who clearly had been dating him or had been seeing him or whatever the relationship was. And I ended up writing a whole article about sitting next to someone who has a relationship with a player. All that sort of stuff that I've gone on to do afterwards. Like, if you go back and have a look at the early Bryce McGain chronicles, and I probably wrote like 30,000 words on this random dude who played one test. A lot of what I ended up doing as a professional writer comes from Bryce McGain.
Yeah, I mean, I had an inkling that you might go for him because I remember we did a Footmarks on Australia's spinners, right? Post-Warne spinners. And we spoke a lot about Bryce McGain. And I feel like one thing that really sticks out for me personally is that he is someone who never gives up. I know he doesn't take a wicket in the solitary test match that he plays, but it's a story of perseverance in a way. And I feel like that kind of resonates with you too. That's kind of what draws you to him. Maybe.
Yeah, I kind of like misfits who make it later in life, because I'm a misfit who made it later in life, right? Yeah. You know, Estelle's a misfit who made it later in life. Bayram's a misfit who made it later in life. It's the children who work for us at good areas that I absolutely despise. but you know, there is an element of that, because I think, you know, I went to film school when I was 26, 27. And the most interesting people I went to film school with were the people who were 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, right? Because they were people who'd already lived a life and like, no, I have to do this. The people who came straight out of school, some of them had really good skills. And, you know, there's one guy who still makes horror films who I came up with. And he was a really talented guy, but he wasn't an interesting person. Do you know what I mean? He was just a guy who had filmmaking skills, right? And Bryce McGain is nothing else an interesting person in that he has to ask for leave from his very decently paid job to be a professional cricketer in Australia in like 2008 and 2009, when it's Australia's completely professional at that point. And Bryce McGain's like, yeah, I've just got to stop doing my IT job so I can come and play for Australia. I've got to go on a tour with India. Is it okay if I get this time off? You know, it's very, very different. And so, yeah, I do. There's no doubt I have a soft spot. And, you know, in some ways, Bryce McGain's also the Seymour Clarke story, which you're going to have to go back and find another episode where I talk about him. But I really like those sorts of guys.
Yeah, it could be a movie. And I mean, I'd pay to watch that movie. But before you make your second pick, Jared, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Crick Picks with Behram, Jared and Estelle. And we will be back in like half a minute. So go nowhere.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Jared, Behram and Estelle, and we are 1/5 the way through picking our favorite cricketers of all time. 20 minutes in. This was supposed to be a quick half-hour thing, and I feel like it's going to go a lot longer. Jared, pick number 2 for you.
Keith Miller is the next one. I think Keith Miller is close to perfection as a cricketer could be. He bowled, he's, you know, in the top 2 or 3 quickest bowlers in the world and batted in the top 4. He was a, you know, incredible fielder, captain New South Wales, probably, you know, before Warne, it was Keith Miller was the guy who should have captained Australia, who never did. Obviously was a professional athlete in 3 different sports, was a professional athlete as a jockey, was a professional athlete as Aussie rules football, and then went on to fly fighter jets in World War II as well. And he fucked members of the royal family. Like, he had a life, right? And he wasn't, there's a great documentary about how bad he was as a dad, which is really interesting. But I think as a, you know, as a figure, I remember, who was it? Chris Cairns. Chris Cairns once talking about Keith Miller, and there's, Chris Cairns wouldn't, like me, would never have watched Keith Miller, and all you had was the stories and everything else. And Chris Cairns was like, this is like the idea, this is the human being you want to be, right? And the fact that Chris Cairns was saying that like 40 years after Keith Miller had ever played, and he'd never probably seen much of it, footage of him, I think sort of tells you the kind of impact that Keith Miller had on people. And I think because of the sort of nestled in around Bradman and Sobers a little bit. And so he kind of got lost and you know, and everything else. But I think he has a bowling average of like, what, 22 or 23 and could bat and batted them behind Bradman sometimes at number 4. Like, he just, this guy was just next level. And we, I always joke in Australia that like in that era, you were a Bradman family or a Miller family. Mm-hmm. And my family was very clearly a Miller family.
Yeah, this has been discussed quite a few times on this show, and I feel like a lot of our viewers and listeners will know that the Kimber family was a Keith Miller family. But, you know, as someone who, you know, before Good Areas, of course, I was a cricket nerd back then as well, but the knowledge gained has been exponential, right? Like, you learn about guys like Seymour Clarke, for instance, right? And Jim Foat. But Keith Miller was just a name that I had heard. And now I understand the cultural impact that Keith Miller had on Australia. And I find that very fascinating, right? Because Bradman is the guy everyone knows about. Keith Miller is the guy who people must have only heard of, but don't know what sort of a social sort of impact he had.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Keith Miller was an Australian sex symbol before that was really a thing, right? Like, and also Bradman was a little bit English. Like, as in, if you listen to Bradman giving speeches and everything, he's obviously Australian, but he seamlessly sort of fits in with that sort of English upper crust society when he has to. Keith Miller was like a bogan and a rock star and a Brill Cream model. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was, you know, there's that famous story of like Bradman saying to Keith Miller, oh, I'm going to visit the royal family tonight. And Miller saying, yeah, I'm going to be doing the same thing, but I'm going in the back entrance, which I hope was a euphemism as well. But the point being is that like he was very much an early sort of Australian style icon as a cricketer in a way that Bradman and a lot of the other guys weren't. And so Keith Miller sort of inspires Richie Beno, which inspires the Chappells and Lily, and you know, you go through all the way to Steve Waugh and all those. Like, that all comes from Keith Miller just being a dude, right? Like, on top of just being one of the most talented athletes that Australia's ever produced in anything, he's just a dude.
Fair enough. Back to you, Estelle. Pick number two. Please don't steal another one of my picks. She's going to do it, isn't she?
I was going to pick Michael Clark.
Okay, then. It has happened.
Kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. I wrote that down because I was 100% sure she was being accurate.
Is it Brett Lee, then?
No.
Brett Lee it is.
No. No, I'm going with, actually, this is probably, yeah, this is my only, well, not my only, but it's one of my non-childhood picks. I'm going with Susie Bates as my second favorite. I think, I hadn't followed women's cricket until like 2013-14, right? And when I started following it, like, one of the first players that really stuck out to me was Susie Bates, because she had represented New Zealand at the Olympics as well. And as a child, like, I had always wanted to be in the Olympics. I did athletics, and you know, that was kind of a bit of like a pipe dream kind of thing. So seeing,
I don't know if you're tall enough to play basketball at the Olympics.
Not basketball. No, I don't. I haven't played basketball ever. You know, to me, it was kind of mind-blowing that you could be like amongst the best players in two major sports in your country and represent your country in, you know, World Cups and the Olympic Games and things like that. But having watched her over the next decade and a bit, I think also as a player, she's such an incredible leader, and that really comes through in the way she plays the game, right? Like, I think people who probably watched her in the last 5 years wouldn't be too impressed by the kind of performances she's put on. But as a leader and as a teammate, you'd always hear like players talk about her and the impact she has on teammates and the game as well. So yeah, definitely one of my favorite current players, favorite current player.
So she's probably in the fringe of my top 10, I think. And again, as you say, like, so I'm sure I've told this story, but we went to a women's game at Beckenham recently, and she was there. And it's the first time I've met her in person outside of like press conferences and stuff, right? So I've chatted to her a little bit and everything, but it's the first time I met her. And I don't think I even had factored in how much of a fan I was until I went up. And like, I was nervous going up to talk to her in a way that I would not be nervous to go up to Sunil Gavaskar. Right. There was something about it. And I think she was, you know, Estelle talked about her leadership. She was just a great captain. Like, tactically, she was so, her ability to read the game was that sort of, you know, a Brendan McCullum, Owen Morgan, MS Dhoni sort of thing, where you're just like, why is she doing this? And it's like, oh my God. Like, and she's playing it like it's a video game at times, like the risks that she would take. An incredible player. And like, you know, I wouldn't say we're friends or anything, but the ability to, you know, interview her for the book and everything, go up and chat to her at the grounds. Look, I think she's just a fantastic athlete. And she's also an incredible, like, she's probably too humble, right, Estelle? Like, I think she really doesn't have the ego of someone like her should have. And it's a little bit disappointing, if I'm being honest. I kind of wish Susie Bates was a bit more of a dick.
Well, I mean, I think humility is a great trait, but this is a multifaceted sportswoman, right? Like, she's not just a cricketer either. So I understand how, you know, she was up there for both of you. And that means it's my turn again as well. Okay. There are a few players now that I'm confused between, because obviously there are a lot of favorite cricketers that we all have throughout the course of our lives, and Estelle took Adam Gilchrist from me, so that leaves me a bit, you know, confused. But
you can pick Brett Lee or Michael Clarke.
No, I'll go for a vanilla pick. Pick number two for me is Waseem Akram. And I haven't watched Waz's career all too much, by the way. I've caught the last couple of years. That's it.
He was shit then, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's weird because, you know, you grow up listening to the name a lot. And, of course, Imran Khan is another one of those names. But Waseem Akram was the guy I went to YouTube and watched all the highlights of. And I remember his spells. Like that one game where New Zealand have to chase nothing in the final 10 overs. And they still win, but Waz is bowling reverse swing and he's unplayable. And then, of course, 92 World Cup highlights and the back-to-back wickets in the final. And then the persona off the field, he's a funny guy, to say the least, right? Like, he's a character. One of my bucket list items is that Waz has a chat with me in the morning, right? Like, as is the meme. or as the meme goes. And, you know, he was literally magic. Like, that bowling action, as much as you try to mimic it, even if you're bowling right-handed and try to mimic it, I just couldn't quite ever manage it. And I felt that, you know, watching him, for those people who got to watch him in his pomp, that is an absolute privilege. And I missed out because the skills were endless. The way he would make the ball talk or dance even, right? Like, it was just kind of snaking away everywhere, old ball or new. I feel like I really missed out not having that, having watched that live. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just a Pakistan thing, but Waz is definitely up there for me.
It's not a Pakistan thing because I think a lot of people have him. I mean, I imitated his action. I kind of taught myself how to bowl swing bowling off watching Wazim Akram. But also his batting, right? He was a filthy slogger at a time, you know, when not everyone was, right? Like, you know, it's way before Bazball. What, you know, and he also made ODIs as a shit format, let's be honest, especially in those days when you had the ball would go brown. No one could fucking see it. It would be like a, and he would still do magical things with it. So he would make ODIs that were boring, exciting in a way that other countries couldn't do. I think he's probably just outside my top 10, but he's not far away. He really was. And it's funny because I've written a lot about, you know, people, you did a podcast recently comparing, you know, Wazim Akram to Imran Khan. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Imran Khan's like a top five cricketer of all time. Yeah. And Wazim Akram just isn't, right? Like there's, you know, and yet, so I think there's a lot of Wazim Akram fans who think I'm not a Wazim Akram fan. Whereas like, I literally grew up, you know, wanting to bowl like Wazim Akram. Like, you know, I think of the cricketers I grew up with, he's the one who, if I could have just been that kind of cricketer, if I could have just bowled really, really fast and then slogged, I would be like, yes, I would like that, please. Could I have one of those?
Also, I know that a lot of people don't particularly enjoy him on comms, and I'm not saying it's quality commentary. I'm just saying I love it. Like, you know, I'm always there listening very keenly. What's the next joke going to be? What's the other repeated story that we're going to hear once again? He's just someone who is kind of a larger than life dude. He has that Ravi Shastri-ness to him to a certain degree. And it makes complete sense why those guys are really good mates. But also, you know, this might come across as a bit of a weird thing to say. But when you look at other Pakistan cricketers, barring a few, because there are a few really good ones, when it comes to representation in the media and how they present themselves and what sort of stuff they say, there are a lot of cricketers who say a lot of bullshit, right? And you're often left like scratching your head, like, why do these people say this sort of nonsense? Wasim Akram's never done that. And he's someone who's very well respected in all of those circles. And anytime he has anything to say, people will listen to him. And I like the sort of respect that he commands in that regard as well. I've never met him. I've met almost all Pakistan cricketers.
You've never met him.
Yeah, I've never met him. I'm manifesting that one day, maybe for Combox, I'll get to do something with him. But yeah,
I've met him a couple of times. I really like him as a person. Like I find him, of the big stars, there's a lot less bullshit around Wazim Akram than there is with some of the other guys. It's in some ways, and I don't think him and Warne always got along that well, but him and Warne were the two where you just like, and I talked about Mahela earlier. They kind of feel like normal guys who happen to be really good at cricket. Whereas obviously that's not the case with everyone else, right? Like, and which is fine. We just said we wanted Susie Bates to be more like that. But yeah, I think I always felt Wazim Akram to be really, really, the first time I ever chatted to him, I was yelling at the TV because someone was saying something wrong at the TV, completely oblivious that there was other cricketers behind me. And Wazim came up to agree with me, right? Like, and he could have easily been like, who's this random guy I don't know, like having a go at some famous cricketer. And instead it was the opposite. And he was like, I've always found him, you know, in the three or four times that I've interacted with him, just a very chill guy for someone who wouldn't always think he would be chill because obviously, you know, being in Pakistan and being that kind of level of famous can't have been an easy thing.
Yeah. Plus he was always a fierce competitor on the field. Wasn't a chill guy over there. So, no. I mean, I feel like he's the sort of bloke I'd really, really like to hang out with someday. And he was pure magic on the field. Anyway, I've got another pick now. So I've gone Kumar Sangakkara and Wasim Akram. I've stuck with my left-handers. Is it time to go rogue? I suppose it is time to go rogue. And this is a part childhood pick, part adult pick. And I'll give you all the rationale. For me, pick number three is Jimmy Anderson. I think I've been pretty vocal about my love for him as well. He was my favorite action, bowling action of all time. And these guys took the absolute piss out of me. I still think it's one of the best bowling actions of all time, by the way. Really, really smooth. It's poetry in motion. And then the adult part of, you know, loving Jimmy, because I liked him from the word go when he wrecks Pakistan in the 2003 ODI World Cup. I liked Jimmy back then as well with the funky hair, with the color in it. Love that guy. But that's not where he, you know, hones his craft and, you know, masters his art. He's someone who transforms with the times. It's a swing bowler, essentially, who goes on and picks up the wobble seam delivery from, I don't know, Mohammad Asif or Stuart Clark. And then he perfects the wobble seam delivery to a point where he is probably the greatest exponent of that skill in cricket thus far. And then he makes it mainstream. So other people start picking up the wobble seam delivery after Jimmy Anderson starts, you know, wreaking havoc with it. And I had the honor of covering his last test match at Lord's. That meant something to me. Watching him, you know, swig down that you know, pint of Guinness in front of a full audience was fun. And then just kind of picking his brain in the press conference, talking to him about the future. I asked him about the coaching role thing and he was like, yeah, I'm probably going to transition. He made it quite evident that he didn't want to retire in as nice a way as possible for a grumpy bloke like Jimmy Anderson. I feel like he was quite civil about that entire ordeal. But like, as someone who lives in a time zone where the English summer is perfect, right? Like the game starts at like 2, 3 p.m. and goes on for the entire day. I've barely missed English summers and Jimmy Anderson was a part of every summer for me. And I, till the very end, loved watching him bowl. In fact, my first ever assignment, you know, from a stadium, you know, in a press box was the Rawalpindi test where Jimmy Anderson bowled and England scored 500 runs in the first day. That was my first day on the job. So there's a lot of stuff over there or, you know, I could unpack a lot more, but I just love the guy. And it's less to do with his personality and more to do with, you know, the sort of cricketer that he was.
I think he's a very complex character. I remember the ECB wanted me to do some consulting on like how to change how the media covers cricket. And this is like early on in my career. And I came up with this idea of basically make it more like American style, but without the press going into locker rooms, but essentially, you know, opening up. The ICC eventually took this on board years later and still didn't do it very well. But like the ECB was like, we can't do that. Jimmy won't be happy. And I went, okay, then he can just be grumpy in the corner. And yet at the same time, Jimmy asked to do a apprenticeship with ESPN, right? And has gone on to be a podcaster of all fucking things. Like the guy who's grumpy and doesn't always like talking does a podcast. Like I think he's quite a complex guy. I don't think people know the full Jimmy Anderson, even through tail enders. I don't think it's come out the way that it would be. But yeah, he's a grumpy guy that everyone's afraid of, and yet he's adapted to modern life, whether it be the wobble ball or podcasting, more than almost any other English cricketer ever. Right? Like he's this obdurate northern grump, and yet at the same time he's this incredible progressive force within cricket. It's so weird. It really is a remarkable thing when it comes to him. But yeah, I know how much you like him, and I'm not going to make fun of his bowling action.
And this is what this podcast is ultimately about. It's just about our favorite cricketers. But anyway,
making fun of Bayram, I thought he meant.
Before we go to Estelle's next pick, we shall be taking a short break. This podcast has finally started to move, but we'll be back in like half a minute, guys. So don't go anywhere because there's still a fair few cricketers that we need to pick.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I've been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Jared, Bayram and Estelle, and we are currently drafting our favorite cricketers of all time. I've picked three. These guys have picked two each, and it's back to Estelle. Let's see what sort of surprise she has, you know, in the offing.
Actually, I think it might be a surprise. My third pick is Jaunty Rhodes.
Jeez.
I think my first favorite cricketer.
I don't even remember him playing for Australia.
My first favorite cricketer. My earliest memory is probably that run out in 92 from watching that World Cup.
How old were you in 92?
34.
I was three.
Wow, great memory, Esther.
But it's like I can't remember the World Cup or the match, or maybe I can't actually remember it happening in the game, but that run out was something that I remember from childhood, right? And just the athleticism, I remember. So I have an older brother who used to play cricket. He's like 7 years older to me, so he was really into like his school cricket, right? And I used to play with him, and like I remember just
Which
trying
school?
Not my Not a famous, not okay. a St. Thomas's or
just,
a Trinity.
Just checking.
He was at Wesley College. So I remember like watching videos of Jonty and like the drills he used to do. Like one particular one is that he used to turn his back towards the wall, get someone to throw the ball at the wall and turn around and catch it. Things like that, like that I used to try to do as a child, right? And the diving and stuff like that. So he's one, I think, that really made me want to play the game and made the game kind of really interesting to me as a child. So that was my dilemma. Do I pick him at number one or not? But Gilchrist is, I think, all time my favorite. Yeah. Rhodes was like, during my childhood, for sure, I wanted to be like Jonty Rhodes.
Love it. Also, I would have loved it if you had picked Jonty Rhodes as your first pick.
Because you would have taken Gilchrist, right?
Maybe Gilly was still on the table in that case, but well.
You've picked very sort of three sort of fresh-faced nerds, haven't you? Don't you think you've picked like three like really nice people who are like eager, enthusiastic type of humans? I don't know what that says about you, Estelle. I'm just pointing it out.
Well, I mean, let's see if Michael Clarke eventually makes it or not. That's what we're all waiting for, right?
He's kind of still fresh-faced, although not quite the nerd on
not anymore.
All right.
Michael Clarke has aged poorly, says Estelle. We've got some headlines out of this one.
Yep.
Back to you, Jared.
I am going to go. So I've picked two Australian ones, which I didn't realize until just now looking at the board. But my third one is going to be Martin Crowe, who I suppose was the Susie Bates of my childhood, if that makes sense. Going back to what we were saying before, I just thought he thought about cricket and played cricket in a way. Like he was so technically perfect, but was also willing to be dirty, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't like a technically perfect player in the way like Ian Bell is, right? There was a sort of a grit center and to Martin Crowe. And then there was a genius level that he could unlock, like, you know, when he worked out reverse swing before anyone else, right? And, you know, these sorts of things. Then you have his captaincy. By the 92 World Cup, he was in his pomp. We were probably robbed of about 3 years of his career because his knees went away. So instead of getting the full tactical genius of Martin Crowe, he went off and invented T20 cricket before there was T20 cricket, right? Like, I mean, that's how far ahead of the game he was. I've said this quite a bit, but he wore a white helmet. So I found a helmet that was white so I could have the same. I was playing on concrete wickets with composite balls. So not even proper cricket balls, like plasticky balls. And they never got above about knee high. And I still wore a thigh pad because I wanted to look like him. And he had this giant preposterous thigh pad that he would wear. And there was heaps of us in Australia and Melbourne at that time who were dressing and acting like Martin Crowe. He was such a pivotal person to a lot of our cricket memories when we were kids. And then, of course, I grow up to meet him. And we talk about, you know, with Bayram, being starstruck and everything. I had been, chatting to Martin Crowe for a long time via email and direct message on Twitter and public Twitter messages. And then we went to the same event and I think it was the 20-year anniversary of Crick Info. And he was flown in from New Zealand for that event. And I knew I was going to be meeting him and I couldn't really feel comfortable until I'd met him. And I was in the hotel at like some big Indian hotel where the event was. And there was this packed lobby and everyone was there. And I suddenly hear, Kimba, Kimba. And like I turn around and Martin Crowe was just like running around people and jumping over them. And he's like a foot taller than half the people there, right? And at this stage, you know, the cancer had set in. So he had the big like bald melon and like... And he's just screaming my name and running across. And like, we never met. And he just gives me a hug. And I got to spend a few days with Martin Crowe. And I remember talking to Martin Nicholas about this, about like I could meet Warne, you know, and had met Warne and had met Lara and all these other players, but Martin Crowe wanting to be my friend was the most uncomfortable thing that had ever happened to me, because it's so hard to be a friend with someone who you dressed up as when you were 10. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was such a weird thing. And so, yeah, but so Martin Crowe played a big part in a lot of my career. And, I'm still quite sad that he passed on at a point when I was still uncomfortable. And I think over time I would have eventually gotten past that. But he was desperate to be my friend. And I was just like, but you're Martin Crowe. I don't know if you could be my friend.
Yeah. Well, I remember
just thinking while you were telling the story that thank God that first meeting didn't happen in Sri Lanka, because him shouting your name out would not have gone down well in a Sri Lankan hotel.
That's a joke just for our Sri Lankan fans who know exactly what that means.
Those of you who have been watching Crick Picks quite regularly, you will know what it means. And here's a nice little Easter egg in episode 99, right?
I'm pretty sure in Mumbai it was okay. I think we were okay in Mumbai, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So I have him. Yeah, go. Yeah. Sorry.
Just on Martin Crowe, I remember when the 2015 ODI World Cup was happening in New Zealand, there was a video that came out where he really wanted New Zealand to win, and it was kind of like unfinished business for him back from 92, right? And I was obviously rooting for New Zealand. Everyone but Estelle was probably rooting for New Zealand in that final, right? So it kind of like made me feel really sad that that never happened. And then, of course, he passes on. But, you know, you can feel very fortunate, Jared, that one of the people on your list is someone who you knew personally. Even if you were awkward around him in person,
two.
He was your mate.
Weirdly, two of the people so far have been on my list.
Two, Bryce Payne as well.
When they lost in 2015 World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
No, 2015. So he came out, and if you have a look, and I think Crick Info have taken it all down, but me and Andy Zaltzman had a show, and Martin Crowe still came up and made jokes afterwards about things. So it was the last time I saw him, which was like literally an hour after the 15 World Cup, and he gave me a big hug, and we all knew that it wasn't going to be long after that. He was quite ill at that point. Just weirdly enough, actually, so I know Martin Crowe and I know Bryce McGain. Keith Miller died when I was working for Qantas, and I was being trained in the city, and he had his funeral at this big a place not too far from where I was being trained. And so I went in, not the funeral, the ceremony, I should say, but I went to go and have a look because it was open. You could just walk in, right? Mm. And he was like, it wasn't like there were like tens of thousands of people there. It was, you know, maybe about 1,000 people, and you could have got in. And I went up the stairs and I was like, oh, I don't know, this doesn't feel right. I'm not sure I've earned this. And I left. So I weirdly have a relationship one way or another with all three of these guys.
If I think about it, I met Sangha at Jimmy's last test. I went to Jimmy's last test to cover it. And Waz is just that one cricketer over here that I haven't really had any interaction with.
Estelle plays Sudoku with all three of her.
Also,
I don't know if you could Scrabble, Wordle. Actually. It would be Wordle. No, yes. Scrabble, yeah.
I find it fascinating that you brought up the reverse swing thing with Martin Crowe, that he's one of the few people who figured it out. Waseem Akram rates him as the toughest batter that he's ever bowled to, who's on my list. So it's like a weird little multiverse over here. Yeah.
Well, talking about Pakistanis, my next player is from Pakistan, and that's Mushtaq Ahmed, who I literally copied his bowling action when I was a kid. I don't think I would have become a wrist spinner if it hadn't been for Mushtaq Ahmed. For me, he seemed to come from a different universe. Australian cricketers were always trying to be cool or masculine and, like, you know, really manly. And Mushtaq Ahmed was a manic pixie dream girl type cricketer. Like, he just looked like a little kid who got lost, and like those big chubby cheeks and that ridiculous camp action that he had. And he was so skillful. And it was sad for me that I think he was probably a better bowler when he got older and Pakistan stopped picking him. When he was at his absolute best, it was probably when he was playing for Sussex. And I would follow the scorecards in Sussex. And he put up like video game numbers for Sussex and changed Sussex cricket forever from something that wasn't even a center of cricket to something else. And someone I don't think I've ever met him or bumped into him at all. Outside of seeing him sometimes when he was coaching on grounds, and I've been at the grounds there. So I don't know what he's like or anything, but for me as a young kid, I don't think I'd become a leg spinner if it isn't for Mushtaq Ahmed. And he was certainly my hero when I was a kid.
Yeah, I've actually had a few interactions with Mushy, you know, in press boxes. Not press boxes, press conferences, because he's always part of the coaching staff of some team, right? Like, that's a constant with him. He's working somewhere, if it's not
franchise. They don't always let him do the press conferences, though, because the man can be a bit loose.
Yep, at times that has also happened. I mean, he's been with England, Bangladesh, I think Sri Lanka, maybe even at some point. I'm not sure about that one, but PSL franchises as well. So he seems to be a gentle person who... also doesn't like to lose is what I've heard. Like, Mushtaq Ahmed will want to always win. He has that in him.
Very fierce competitor. I think one of my favorite ones was when him and Warne would go up against each other and they would just determine to destroy each other, right? Whether they were batting or bowling against the, and I love that about, you know, Mushtaq Ahmed.
Yeah. Also, like, the action is interesting. You've picked him a fair few times on Quick Picks. Now you know that we're 99 episodes in. I feel like every time he's been picked on the show, it's been by you. So I'm not particularly surprised. Also, that you're a wrist spinner. So that makes complete sense. And now we are what? Back to Estelle?
Back to me.
I'm trying to work out. I'm trying to work out what Estelle's, what the least surprising, what the most surprising next pick from Estelle would be. Right. Like, what would
Elise
be her?
Katie.
At least another clean face. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's why I said on theme.
Do you only like nice people? What sort of a freak are you?
It's weird though, because like when I watch cricket, like if I take Sangha for an instance, right? I used to hate it that he didn't celebrate and wasn't in the face of like the opponents or anything like that. It used to really bother me. Like, why aren't you celebrating your hundreds? Why aren't you like throwing your hands around and stuff like that? But it seems like, I mean, the names I've gone with, I like the opposite. I don't know. So, I mean, if I look at the people I picked before, like, Petty's probably the best athlete by a mile, right? Like, she's a freak athlete, isn't she? At 34, 35, she's still...
I mean, to be fair, you've got four freak athletes on your list. I mean, there isn't anyone there that's not a freak athlete.
Yep. And she's like... at a different level when you come, I mean, to me, if I compare the four of them, just an incredible player, right? And it seems like she's, I don't want to jinx it, but like, it doesn't seem like she's slowing down. She keeps setting the standard higher and higher every time she gets out there, right? And has been such an incredible part of what's been like one of the most dominant teams in the game. So, not someone who I kind of idolized, obviously, because she's younger than me. But, like, I mean, I didn't grow up watching her or anything. But, like, definitely when I got into watching a lot of women's cricket, she's one who I'd always tune in to watch because she always had something, whether even in the field, right? She always offers something and she's one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, she is a proper MVP in, you know, the women's cricket circuit, and she's already have such a big legacy that even if you've jinxed her, Estelle, that shouldn't change much here on. I think it's a fantastic pick, and we should have expected this one as well. I feel like that's on us that we didn't
look at this list. I mean, it was the obvious next name, wasn't it?
Yeah.
She wasn't about to pick Tilakaratne Dilshan here, was she?
Yeah, unless
that might be my fifth pick.
It would not be your fifth pick.
Unless she's into dill scoops and cornrows, right? Like, then it would completely make sense.
Cornrows on the beard, okay?
Yeah, cornrows on the beard. No one's ever done that.
Beard rose.
Yeah. Okay. So my picks thus far have been what? Sangha was the obvious one. I was always going to go for him first because that's just me being authentic to myself and sincere to myself. Then I've gone for two fast bowlers, left arm, right arm. Both have the longevity element in them. Like, Waz and Jimmy just went on and on and on forever. Those are like two decade-long careers. I feel like now I need to go for a batter. And the most obvious choice for me at this point, because Sangha's already gone and Gilly has been kind of taken away from me, I'll go Inzamamul Haq. He's going to be my fourth pick. I, as I mentioned, only caught the tail end of Waz's career, right? But Inzi, I saw a lot of. And that is a Pakistan team which is in flux. And all of a sudden, the bowling attack is gone. You're totally relying on Shoaib Akhtar. And the other guys are like Mohammad Sami. Rana Naveed was all right. I didn't mind Rana Naveed. But you're relying on Inzi, Yusuf, Yunus, those three guys to score all the runs for you. And Inzamam was the captain of that team. Him and Woolmer, that partnership was the first time where I felt like, you know what, that cricket team really meant something to me. And boy, did that end poorly, right? Like, I've had a traumatic childhood, guys. Inzi gave you a certain level of comfort and confidence that no, he's still there, something will happen. And his last 3-4 years were like extremely consistent. He was scoring runs for fun, whether that be test cricket or ODIs. At least that's my memory of it. I haven't ever gone and looked back at the stats. And someone who had that lazy elegance, a lot of time to play his shots, the way he would butcher spinners down the ground after using his feet was something that I absolutely adored about him. And he had teddy bear energy as well, right? So that was something that I grew to appreciate. Although one thing that I disliked about Inzi is that in like the last year probably of his career, it seemed like as captain, he was kind of imposing religion onto his players. I don't know how true this is, but that's what it came across from a distance. And you know, I'm never a fan of imposition and I'm not a religious guy. So that doesn't fly well with me. But overall, if you look at the persona, very well respected, someone who people adore, someone who's just got that innocence when he talks as well. I don't know if you guys have ever heard him kind of break the game down, but it seems like a very like excited child who knows a thing or two about the sport.
He's got like a sing-song way of talking, doesn't he?
Yeah.
There is something quite interesting about him. Look, just a fantastic player. He's in our top 50 batters of all time. Very basic picks from Bayram though, isn't it? Right? Like there's no freaks in this. Like Jonty Rhodes is at least like putting in a little bit of a twist there, but like Inzi, Jimmy, Mozim, Kumar. You could say basically all those those first names and everyone knows who he's picked. I'm just saying, it tells you a lot about Bayram.
Yeah. Well, with
Inzi... Is your number 5 going to be a sir?
Oh, no, it's not. But with Inzi, you have to understand that with Wasim Akram, the difference was that the YouTube videos made me a proper fan, right? And then watching him on TV and listening to him talk, that was like a different experience. With Inzi, I was living through it. And these are my first few years of, you know, avid fandom. And he was the guy I would look up to, that this guy will save us or he will make Pakistan win. And I've only ever cried a couple of times watching cricket. When Inzi retires and he completely bawls his eyes out and Woolmer's dead, I cried, man. Like, I couldn't hold back the tears back then. So, I don't know. He's just had that kind of aura that drew me as a child. And I've shook his hand. I would recommend you guys to have a proper, like, squeeze in for that, because it's a giant hand, right? Like, your hand will get lost in his hand. But yeah, he's an interesting guy. Last pick is a tough one. There is an Australian fast bowler that I could take away from Estelle, because I grew up admiring Brett Lee a lot as well. Like, I love the chainsaw celebration, and Akhtar and Lee were my two guys, because pace is pace, yeah, right? We all love pace. But I feel like I'm going to go as rogue as I've gone in this podcast and pick Brendan McCullum. I love Baz. I love the way he charged down the track and took on, you know, fast bowlers. And in 2015, I was absolutely hooked. Like, I knew Pakistan wasn't going to win that World Cup. And I was completely behind New Zealand. Trent Bolt with the new ball, but more importantly, Brendan McCullum, you know, completely smashing the ball to smithereens in the first 10 overs. It's the way he played the sport that kind of drew me towards him. The tattoos added to like the cool factor or the coolness factor. And then as I grew older and I started working with you, Jared, I realized what sort of impact he had on New Zealand. You know, we all know the no presentation story and just going in and kind of speaking your mind, trying to get the captaincy job. Someone who has been quite radical with the way he thinks about the game. But, you know, even England weren't winning as much before Bazball. And even if Bazball hasn't been a success, you'd have to say McCullum kind of brought life into what was a really, really lethargic and losing outfit. And with New Zealand, you know, he makes them one of the best teams in the world. And the seeds that he sows goes on to help them win a World Test Championship later on, I feel. So I think that his contribution to the sport is, you know, it can't be really quantified easily because it's so widespread. And also, it's just the character. He's a cool guy. I don't know. I love watching him bat. The style of his batting was amazing. And, you know, big six hitter. And I lost Gilly, so I have to go for Baz. That's my rationale.
Another basic bitch.
Wow.
I mean, look. I thought he was going rogue. How is that rogue? How is Brendan McCullum rogue?
I could have gone for Brett Lee, Shoaib Akhtar, those two. Shahid Afridi was in the mix for
me. You could have gone for a cricketer that people didn't automatically know straight away, or a cricketer that isn't on everyone else's. Look, everyone you've picked is on someone's like list. Like, look at Estelle's. Like, there's some flexibility there. There's some movement. I don't know.
I mean, I love McCullum.
Man. I've loved him for a very, very long time. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's such an interesting person. Obviously, there are some drawbacks with him as a coach at times. Mm-hmm. And I talked about those ad nauseum. But I don't think there's ever been a cricketer who is, when he is batting or bowling or whatever they're doing, that I have to watch more than Brendan McCullum. I absolutely had to watch every single moment of it. And I talked about this, you know, I wanted to write a book on him. I wrote probably 20 or 30,000 words in 1 year on him at one stage. I just found him a captivating player. It's just a disappointing way to finish your list.
Yeah, well, I mean, other guys on my list with Joe Root, also very vanilla. Alistair Cook is someone
Alistair Cook.
Love, right? Watching bat. And of course, there's the Pakistani
guys. No one
guys,
loved
right?
watching Alistair Cook bat. What the fuck is wrong with you?
I like watching him on turning tracks where he's sweeping the ball into oblivion forever, right? Oh, like, there was a novelty to that. But like,
Alistair Cook didn't like watching Alistair Cook bat.
There are tons of Pakistani guys. I mean, Mohammad Asif, if he hadn't fucked up, he'd be on this list, surely.
See, that would have been, that's an interesting pick.
But yeah, of course, growing up a Pakistan fan, there are going to be lots of those guys. But, you know, Baz, Gilly, Jimmy, Kumar, these guys I really was completely hooked to when I was a kid. So I feel like they all kind of deserved a mention. And Gilly would have been on my list if not for, you know, Estelle. And Baz would be out.
Well, you should have picked him first.
I should have. But then that also would be me being insincere. Because not picking Sangha as my first pick, people would have caught on to that, right?
What is the... Estelle's going to finish off here, and I'm trying to think what the least likely pick is. Is it Marlon Samuels?
That's a good one. Is it... Wait, she hasn't picked a single Sri Lankan, has she?
No, I haven't.
It might be...
Her list is actually incredibly white.
White.
Because it's not just... It's not just that it's white people, because you could have a list of like white players, but I would say that this full group is incredibly... They're white amongst white players. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Like this, she's almost picked a translucent list.
Mm-hmm. Time to add some color, maybe not.
Like this is it's like the milquetoast 11.
Don't be influenced by us. Pick your favorite.
Not at all.
Yeah.
No. Before I pick mine, I was going to say like Brendan McCullum, his character, right? There's one line that has stuck with me. One line that a player has said, it's got to be what he said, I think in an interview after the 2015 World Cup final, where he said that basically, you know, he did everything right in that dismissal against Stark. He did everything right. He did what he wanted to. He wouldn't take it back. Except for the fact that he forgot the most important thing, which was to watch the ball. And I thought it was such a like a great line in that sometimes the most basic thing, right? It's a basic thing. In that moment, under that pressure, he forgot to do that. And the way he spoke about it, I thought it spoke a lot about his character and, you know, kind of he was so sold on how he wanted to go about things, right, in that World Cup. And it had brought him so much success.
And
he wasn't regretful about, because everyone was criticizing that shot and saying, you know, what, Starks had an incredible tournament. Why would you play that kind of shot in the first over? But he did actually play exactly how he had played right throughout. He forgot to watch the ball.
Also, for me, I could have gone for Freddie Flintoff and Ben Stokes as well. I really like those guys. Just wanted to put that out there.
Okay, my last pick. Obviously, Brett Lee was very close. Very close to making the top five.
I cannot believe he hasn't made it.
Yeah,
but I'm going to someone who was Brett Lee before Brett Lee. So Aaron Donald will be my final pick.
Okay,
I just love.
So we said your list was too white, and you went
white
thunder,
white lightning,
the white lightning, white thunder, lightning, white thunder.
Brilliant, the white lightning picks.
Yeah, brilliant. The whitest five picks I've made, I think, on Creek Picks. Just like an incredible player to watch, right? He wasn't as fast as Lee or Akhtar, at least on record, but just the type of energy he brought into it. In a sense, I would feel like he was a scarier bowler to face than maybe Brett Lee, because
I agree.
He kind of had that aura about him, like he was quick and he would be at you all the time. And I think growing up South Africa, that South African team was one that like everyone at home used to love watching. So that's definitely had an influence in me going with Donald as my fifth pick.
Yeah, I would. If you gave me the choice out of him and Brett Lee, like I know Brett Lee. Maybe I'm like slightly too old for Brett Lee, but like Alan Donald was a much sexier version of the same thing. You know, the fact that also, if you grew up in my era, you kind of heard about him before he appeared because, you know, we weren't watching county cricket or anything, so we didn't know. And there's this rumor of like the fastest bowler in the world is this South African, you know, and all these different things were going on. Yeah, I just thought he was captivating. But yeah, I think he had a better bouncer than Brett Lee as well. So I think there was, he probably was a little bit more dangerous in that particular way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no issue there. It's a hell of a list, Estelle.
And now,
and so I didn't know that Estelle was going to get cancelled at the end of this episode. But
something also, had to happen, right?
If you guys are down, I mean, if you want to waste more time, I'm totally like game for going for a.
Who
spare
do you
round.
Want to pick, Behram?
Are you now saying we don't have pick? Enough? Is that because we don't have enough time to do the footmarks we were supposed to be recording?
Well, we can still do one footmarks, I suppose. Depends on your schedule, but yeah.
No, I think we better, let's just finish this at 5. I think it's more fun to go that way anyway. And also, I want to see you squirm a little bit. I'm going to pick Kirtley Ambrose as my 5th player. Mm. I think I didn't grow up during the peak 80s West Indies. So Kirtley Ambrose is my sort of peak as far as, you know, watching cricket. There's a lot of, Richard Richardson's very high up on my list as well. I absolutely loved him as a kid. But Kirtley Ambrose was just a more fun version of McGrath, right? Like McGrath is kind of like the boring office worker who does really well and ends up with his own, you know, business. And Kirtley Ambrose was more like a WWE heel. Like, you know, he never spoke. He had this incredible presence because of it. Like, no, during his whole career, we had no idea who Kirtley Ambrose was or what he stood for. All we knew was that his mum rang a bell, right, when he took a wicket, and that he did a lot of staring. Like, he committed to that bit unlike almost any other player outside of Andre Nell we've ever seen. It was just like, no, on the field, I am this dude, right? And like, I don't think most of the people who played against him ever knew that he was like this piss-takey guy with like dad jokes who was in a band. And do you know what I mean? Like it never, like if you would have told, someone in like 95 that Kirtley Ambrose was in a band, it'd be like, they must be like a really intense musical group. And then you listen to his music and you're like, that is not an intense, it sounds like the sort of band you'd have at your wedding, right? Like it's not like that at all. And so he basically trolled all of cricket, right? And on top of that, he was so skillful. His accuracy, yeah. His ability to move the ball in both ways. He had a better bouncer than McGrath. He was faster than McGrath. You know, I don't think there's much between them as a bowler. I think McGrath was probably a little bit better for a little bit longer, but there's not much between them. He's one of the greatest bowlers of all time. But again, a bit like Keith Miller, because he sort of comes on the end of all those great West Indians. And it was probably just before the point where we all watched international cricket. Ambrose's career kind of finishes just as cable TV completely takes over and we can watch any series that we want and, you know, YouTube and everything else. And a lot of the Asian cricket has got a lot of that sort of... the cable TV in the 90s, the West Indians, unless they were playing against your team, they were kind of disappearing, right? Like you didn't see it. But you hear the stories, and there's that great stories of Merrick Pringle, who South Africa thought they were going to win their first test back after readmission. And they get their champagne sent to their locker rooms ready. And Kirtley hears that story and is just like, no. You're not going to win, right? Like, it's such a competitor. I love the way he batted as well. He batted like an absolute fruit loop, like just backing away with these ridiculously long arms. I thought he was just an absolutely brilliant cricketer. And again, like, he was someone that I tried to bowl like in the backyard. Been lucky enough to commentate with him a couple of times as well. He really is everyone's goofy uncle. He's got so much goofy uncle vibes as a person. And to think that we all thought he was like the coldest killer of all time. And it turns out he's the uncle that slips you money for sweets, right? Like there's something very cool about that. So he's certainly one of my favorite cricketers when I was a kid. And learning about him as an adult has been just as much fun.
Yeah, I mean, from someone who missed his career entirely, you know, playing live and whatnot, I have obviously like gone on and looked at the footage and he was bloody scary. But, you know, you think of Kirtley Ambrose and you think of the 7-4 versus Australia. You think of that's, you know, little meltdown moment versus Dean Jones or where Dino says that make him get his armband off, and then, you know, he regrets it later. But one of the most recent moments that I, like, it really warmed my heart was when, I think it was the T20 World Cup in 2024, Kirtley was part of the support staff of one of those teams, and after a game, he goes into the dressing room of the opposition team and he just says some really good words and he inspires that entire unit. And I was like, what a brilliant man. You know?
He's an incredibly inspiring person when you meet him, actually. In that sort of goofy uncle way, he'll be like making jokes. And then he just goes bang. And I remember the West Indians when he was their bowling coach. I think there were some issues with him from a technical point of view because he was so natural at everything. He maybe wasn't always the best coach, but they absolutely loved his speeches. Right? Mm. They loved the fact that he cared. And if you go back and you have a look, and I think some of these are online, have a look at the passion he has when he's speaking to the players before going out. It meant something to him, right? Mm. I don't know if that was passed on to him through Viv Richards or what it was, but it meant something more than just playing cricket at the top level. And he wore that. And he was willing, as I said before, to be a heel for a decade and a half, right? Mm. Like, it's a ridiculous thing that he did. But yeah, I just absolutely loved everything about him. And, yeah. Oh, we haven't even mentioned his modern hairstyle.
Yeah, of course. That's brilliant. And I'm going to go listen to some of his music because I knew he was in a band, but I never bothered. And now I'm really curious. What sort of music would Jared like to be played at his wedding, right? Like we all wanted. Anyway, honorary mentions quickly, guys, for you.
I had obviously a million Victorians. You probably don't want the full list, but I mentioned some of them before. I throw Darren Berry in there as well. McCullum would have been very, very high up on my list as well. And then, you know, guys like Victor Trumper, Bob Appleyard, a few of those players. Marizanne Kapp would probably be another modern player. Mm-hmm. She's probably my sixth, I would have thought.
Yeah. For me, if I go back to that generation of Pakistanis, I think Mohammad Yusuf, Shoaib Akhtar, Shahid Afridi, those three could have made it. And then you're looking at Alistair Cook, Freddie Flintoff, and Ben Stokes amongst the Englishmen. Weirdly enough, I love Paul Collingwood. I know that's a really weird one, but I don't know. Love to watch.
Maybe
him
hasn't aged as well of modern times.
Yeah, I mean, the fielder.
Let's move on from that.
Andrew Simons was on my list, but unfortunately, we couldn't get there. Shane Warne, obviously. I feel like he missed out for everyone.
I think I would have picked, and like I think Andrew Simons would have been one of my favorite cricketers of all time, but it just happened to be that in the entire 90s, he was fighting with Ian Harvey for a spot. And like, I can't stand both at the same time. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I had to go with, but I absolutely loved Simons as well. You know, he was absolutely fantastic.
How did we all not go for Warney? Because we all love him. It's interesting.
He's not, it was never one of my favorite cricketers. Oh, Estelle's made some faces.
I wouldn't say, he's a great cricketer, but like Sangha, he's not like one of my favorite cricketers.
Okay.
Who else is on your longer list, Estelle?
Mine, I've got Brett Lee.
I did too.
That's just the sixth white person.
Yeah,
sixth white person probably would have been on team in the nice department, right?
Like, definitely.
Nicer than Donald. Donald's nice as well, I think.
Donald had a bit of dog in him though as well, a bit more than Lee, I always felt. Mm.
And that's it?
No. So I've got Rachel Haynes. Rachel Haynes. Sanath, I think for just inspiring a generation of like Sri Lankans, right, during the 90s.
Again, hasn't aged as well, that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I had Lee as well and Akhtar, but I feel like I might go Lee over Akhtar because it's the chainsaw celebration and the lock and load bowling action. I love the guy. And Shane Bond as well. Throw him in there.
Shane Bond.
Shane Williamson, Joe Root.
Oh, like, wait. I forgot Nathan Astle. Nathan Astle used to be my second favorite cricketer when I was a child.
I think Nathan Astle would have made your list better. If you go on there. Other ones I had from childhood were Dean Jones was a big one.
I'm surprised you didn't go for him, actually.
Yeah, absolutely loved him.
And you guys, I just checked, before I get cancelled, Susie Bates has Maori blood, okay?
Okay. I love that you looked that up.
Completely white.
I love that you looked that up.
On that note, I suppose, Jared, let everyone know what our picks were and then let's wrap this up.
Bayram went Kumar Sangakkara, Wasim Akram, Jimmy Anderson, Inzam Amal Haq, Brendan McCullum. Estelle went Adam Gilchrist, Susie Bates, who is not 100% white, apparently, according to Estelle. Jonty Rhodes, Elise Perry, Alan Donald. And I went Bryce McGain, Keith Miller, Martin Crowe, Mushtaq Ahmed, and Curly Ambrose.
Well, those are fascinating lists. This could have gone on for another hour because I feel like we could have made like entire teams of our favorite cricketers. But you guys let us know which set of five you like most. And I hope that, you know, you got to know a bit more about us as people, because that's what you wanted. You wanted to know our favorite cricketers so that you could know more about us. But that's a wrap for this episode of the Crick Picks podcast. Next up, we'll have episode number 100. So stay tuned for that. And of course, as I always mention, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage as well. It can be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, videos, and podcasts. We'll see you soon enough. Till then, Happy New Year and take care of yourselves. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.